What's going on, everybody? Thanks for tuning in to NBA Stories. I'm your host, Nick Nasby, and I'm joined by the enemy, the opposition, the ops right now, the Philly Bull himself, Mr. Mark D'Aquila. How you hanging? How you holding up, man? I know it was a tough week for you.
Tough is a tough word right now because, I mean, everything that happened with the Phillies was a blessing this year, really. I have a hard time. I was upset on Saturday night, but then I feel like I reflected Sunday and was just like, damn, like, what an awesome. I mean, we just talked about it in the pre-show. Like, just, it's very similar to the Rangers, I feel like, because it was such an exciting year. I mean, you guys had been waiting for that to come with all the young talent. And when it kind of finally comes to fruition and you're better sooner than you expected, like, I think, and you're turning it up, getting hot at the right time, your expectations rise. And I think that made me like feel like, wow, we're about to win this World Series. And not, you know, it didn't go our way. We played against a great fucking team. That's no longer cheating. I'm not on the Framber Valdez was using the sticky stuff train. I'm not on that. I think they beat us fair and square. And I'm just happy that we have a podcast to do tonight and kind of get my mind back on basketball and really focus all my energy on that right now, because I'm just not even on a Sixers level. I'm wearing the Tyrese Maxey jersey watching the Sixers-Suns game in the background, but I just on a whole level of the entire league right now. There's so many exciting things going on that I just want to get it back into the day-to-day groove of the NBA and taking advantage of that league pass.
And if elected, folks, I promise three things. We're going to bring back steroids, sticky baseballs, and we're going to make sure that the Astros actually get in trouble for the shit they did in 2017, so you guys can stop fucking talking about it. Steroid baseball is the best baseball. Let's get real. I hate saying it. It's so shitty to say it, but it was the best baseball. That was my childhood. You know what I mean? Like, there's guys who didn't do it and were good, but not that many. Like, it was like Griffey and Pujols. Like, that's it. You know what I mean? Like, that's it. That was literally that's the total. Everybody else had some sort of link to it. They were boring. I mean, Tony Gwynn, but he was batting like 350 and hitting one home run in his career. But like, yeah, man, it was I think for both those situations you're talking about, I think a big thing is like, you wish it happened against a different team. For me, it was like, I literally live in Tampa and I had to like listen to all my dipshit pseudo quasi fucking fans who maybe have gone to three games and saw a player at a bar one time and now they're huge Lightning fans. You know, those guys are all fucking rah, rah, let's go Lightning. And like, meanwhile, me as like a childhood fucking Rangers fan, whole life, have like a little sign, a poster in my room with Rangers shit on it. You know what I mean? Like, watching them suck forever. And I'm like, this is potentially it. This is it. This might be our year. We have the goalie of our future. We got everything going for us. And lose to those shithead teams. So I was rooting for the Avalanche really hard last Stanley Cup final. I bought an Avalanche tie just to be a troll. But anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about basketball, right, guys? So first of all, this is the part of the season where every season I feel like we make the mistake of like overreacting too soon. You know, so I try to temper it every year with overreactions, but then like invariably we just do it anyway. Oh my God, this is such a huge, you know, this deal, this thing's going to be so consistent. Like, this team, it has all the staying power in the world. And then it just falls off, right? Like, the last year, I think the big example was the Mavs. Remember how good the Mavs were? And then they just crashed down to earth, ended up as a six seed, a five or a six seed. And it's like, it was like, okay, that's actually what we expected from them, right? And it's like, that happens every single year. And so this year, I think that we leave that aside for a few weeks. Let those ideas muster for a month. See who stays healthy. See who's able to actually have staying power. But I think a big thing for me is the situation that's developing in Brooklyn. It's not getting better. It's not getting better, right? Clearly, the Nets went on a limb and they assembled a super team. They got the two names, and then the next year they get the third name. The third name's already fizzled out. They get another guy who we all knew what he was when he fucking started. Like, Ben Simmons is Ben Simmons. It's not what we think it's going to be anymore. It should be, but it's not going to because he doesn't care. But when it comes to the other two there, you know, we have one who I think is becoming potentially openly disgruntled by the fact that he's got to carry such a load for a team with good pieces, granted, but, you know, carrying a load for a team with a very soft-spoken coach, which is a good thing for a person, but a bad thing for a coach. Shout out Jeff Scott, USF Bulls. Just got canned on Saturday, as he should have. Fuck that guy. But good guy, right? Great guy, bad coach. Same thing with Steve Nash. And I think that's really what it came down to. We'll start with the team overall. Do you think that, because again, I mean, the Ime thing seemed imminent. That suspension was by the Celtics, so I'm fairly positive if they do hire him, he can coach right away. Let's just take all of the extracurriculars out of the equation and just talk about personnel, right? With who they have available right now, if you add a piece like that or keep the assistant coach, you know, coaching for the rest of the year, does this team in Brooklyn actually have a legitimate shot? What do you think the goals or expectations should be for Brooklyn?
I think the situation going into the season is very similar to where it's at right now, which is unrecoverable. And I think firing Steve Nash would have been the step in the right direction, but it still doesn't really solve anything. And I think bringing in Udoka was a move that felt like it almost like reminded me of bringing in like a player with a lot of baggage to help save the season. Right. They're like, we are so screwed right now.
Which, by the way, is what they've also done. Just putting that out there.
Quite literally. And it's like, what I don't understand is that move felt like, I mean, granted, what he did with the Celtics was, I mean, it was a great coaching job, but you're talking about a team that was unbelievably deep and phenomenal all around. Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum were extraordinary last year, and the role players around them were just like the perfect mix. And I'm not saying he didn't do a great coaching job, but if you think that he's going to come in now with all the baggage that caused Boston to suspend him for the season and fix all of this team's problems, like, you're in for a rude awakening as a Nets fan. And I mean, the sad part is Kevin Durant is third in the league in scoring right now. He's been phenomenal. That's a bad thing. You don't need him to be third in the league in scoring with what talent is on that team. He's forced to do that to even try and stay in these games. And it's a real question that I've begun to think is a reality, that Kevin Durant could be moved at the deadline. I really think that it's a possibility. And everyone just pretending to act like everything's okay right now in Brooklyn, I think this is a team that is fizzling out similarly to the Lakers last year. I think you're realizing the roster construction isn't there at an early point in the season. And when everyone around you is like these big star names that clearly aren't working together, and you know the right group isn't in place, that's going to start to wear on itself really, really quickly. I mean, this is a team that is already struggling out of the gates terribly. What is that? Their record 4-6, 5-5. I forget what they are, but it's nothing special. And I think that it's just like the Lakers started last year, where this is going to fizzle out quickly. And the Kyrie situation is only going to make those matters worse. I think just the amount of negative attention that this team's getting, it's take all of it out. If you take all of the non-basketball stuff out and just put these guys on the floor right now, I don't think they're good enough to be
think it would even matter.
I really don't.
Distractions, and it's just like, I mean, I wanted to go like as far and as long as possible without mentioning Kyrie, because like right now everything he's doing, it's like, okay, we can talk about Kanye and the way that Kanye has burned his life basically to the ground because of his own, I would say, just mental illness and inability and unwillingness to do anything about it. But now it's starting a movement of individuals who are speaking out about things that are just, quite frankly, it's just not necessary or needed. And it's taking a reality that is spun in one's own head and trying to force that square peg into that round hole. And that's what happened there. You know what I mean? It's unacceptable. That's what it really comes down to. And it doesn't matter to me the people who speak out about, you know, the things that he is saying. Okay, I understand. Yes, he's talking about the oppression of Black people in America. That's a real thing. But what is unacceptable is talking about a Holocaust denial in a movie that you put on your platform and then refusing to apologize for it. Basically saying that it was okay. It was my idea. It's something that I wanted to do. Right. And then doing the deflection game that we see so expertly done by people in the last 6-7 years. I mean, here's the thing, the six points that he needs to do to get back onto the team, not going to do them. He's going to be out for 20 games. He's not going to do it. He doesn't care. Like, they fucked with his money and he's still doing this.
He's proven it time and time again that he doesn't care.
I mean, how many times have I said Kyrie Irving will burn his way through every single organization that he will go to because he does not care about a team. He doesn't care. He cares about Kyrie. He cares about trying to make a point. He cares about trying to make a stand about something, but he does not care about the people in his circle. And his circle right now is the Brooklyn Nets, and he's fucking them. He's fucking them sideways because he thinks that he's above this. That's what it is in reality. In the real world, that's what it is. In Kyrie's world, it's, I'm a martyr for some message that needs to be said by me for some reason, right? So that's the problem. It all unfortunately came to a head and Steve Nash got fired. Now, he should have been fired. He's not a good coach. But like, I've been saying this since he got hired. I love Steve Nash as a player. I think he was a great on-court leader. But I think that there is an edge that you need to have in order to be a coach in a locker room, right? The locker room, the guy on the sidelines is not out on the court passing to the guys, feeding the rock, making everybody feel better about themselves. The guy on the sidelines is yelling at you to do something different, right? That's a different relationship than a point guard. The point guard's the best fit for that kind of relationship, but you can't have it if you're a nice Canadian guy who just wants to get everyone to get along, which is what I feel whenever I see Steve Nash. I'm sure there's an edge to him somewhere. I haven't seen it in Brooklyn, and I don't think they have either. And so they kicked him to the curb, and now we're seeing, obviously, like you were saying, Ime getting a crack potentially at being the new coach. Now, I think that when all is said and done, it's going to take a little bit longer for him to get a shot at a coaching job. I think that somebody's going to step in and do something about it. I think that if a team saw enough to suspend the coach that just brought them to the finals for a year, there's most likely more to the story than we saw. A lot came out, but I think there's might be even more than that, right? So they didn't want to tarnish his name because they want him back. Like, that's what it feels like to me, right? Is the suspension for a year, the only way that that's justified and that makes sense is if there was enough to that story to fire him entirely. You know what I mean? And they didn't want to do that because he was so good. So there's something there that we don't know, and we're going to probably have to find out, unfortunately, because I don't think that the Nets are going to stop with this push. He is the best coaching candidate out there. They're going to want him. You know, I mean, if anybody's going to be able to get this group of guys to mesh and coexist and play together, it's going to be a guy like Ime. The problem we run into is this has been the number one example of the issues that you run into when you try to assemble a super team. It is everything we said is the worst case scenario of a super team. It is egos clashing, nobody wanting to get rid of the basketball, everybody going for themselves, and all of a sudden the team is struggling. this team shouldn't be the ninth seed in the East. The Knicks shouldn't have the same record as the Nets this year. That's absurd, right? They did it to themselves. They shot themselves in the foot. And it blows my mind that there are people who are so overtly privileged in this particular case in the NBA that they will tank their own reputation and the success of their team so that they can make a message and they can get their way. I find it insanely selfish. It's incredibly immature and juvenile. And to be honest, like, Kyrie should be ashamed of himself. Like, there's no other way to say it.
Absolutely. And I just think, like, with Ime, it's like, I don't see this team, like I had mentioned earlier, like, it felt like that move was like, it was made as like a rescue move, when I don't think that, I don't see this team ever, I don't see Ben Simmons, Kevin Durant, and Kyrie Irving. Like, I don't think that core is ever going to be a successful team. I just don't think it's possible at this point. So then you're looking at, all right, what is recoverable from what we currently have? We have a couple good young guys. I mean, like, there are guys in this situation who deserve better. Like, Nick Claxton is having a great year. Looks like he could be their big man for the future. There's young talent. There's Cam Thomas. There's other guys there. And I think the direction of the franchise after this season is going to look very different. So then you're looking at it as, is this something where we want Udoka in the future? Like, is this a move for the future where he's going to now build this new young core once Kyrie is out of the NBA or Brooklyn or whatever the situation is, and Ben Simmons is no longer in basketball and Kevin Durant's been traded? Yes, if that's your long-term goal and you know that Ime might be canned for the season, go for it. All right, I get that. That's fine. You won't like him as a talent developer. Go for it. But if you think that the vision of the team this season is that he comes in and gets these three guys to work together to put together a playoff run, I think you're insane. And that's why I have really tempered. I mean, I didn't have many expectations at all, but even like Ben Simmons, he's sick in the head. Like, there's something is not right there whatsoever. I thought going into the season, like, deep down, I'm like, oh, he'll be fine. Like, he'll figure this out. He'll be defending the number one on every team and he'll be putting up 15, 8, and 8 every night. Nope, not the case. That is so far from the past. It's not even obtainable at this point. So I really think you're in a position now as the Nets where you're like, where can we move forward with what we do have right now? Is there enough to convince Kevin Durant in this situation, who I actually, God forbid, I say I feel bad for him right now. He put himself in this situation in the first place. He should have never left one of the first two teams he left. But I think he's in a spot where you're like, you need to try as an organization. Sean Marks needs to try and convince Kevin Durant that this is the plan moving forward. And for all we know, these conversations have been had, and that was why they went and got Ime. That might be Kevin Durant in their ear saying, go get this fucking guy. But I just think that the two options right now are they are going to be completely blowing this thing up sooner rather than later, or they have a plan in place with Ime and Kevin Durant, and they might have moves ready to be made in the future to try and somehow convince him to stay. But that's beyond this year. I think this year is out of the question, especially when you look at some of these teams. I mean, like, fucking Milwaukee is undefeated right now. I don't see any way in the world that Brooklyn could compete with them in one game, let alone seven.
I was about to say,
it would be a joke.
I mean, Giannis is on a rampage. He's mad about something. I don't know what the fuck he's mad about. Like, you've done everything you need to do. He is on a warpath to be – he's trying to be the greatest ever. I mean, this is going to be. Think about it. I mean, right – I mean, him and – like, because if you think about it from the perspective of success at a young age, he'll be 28 in December, right? Already has two MVPs and a championship. You know what I mean? And like, how many All-Stars and how many first-team All-NBAs? How many Defensive Player of the Years? Doesn't he have one or two of those?
I do think he has one, but I mean, you know, Gobert's
yeah. steals that. I mean, Gobert's just, yeah, he's been a rope in those ends. But you know what I'm saying? Like, he's done absolutely everything you can do. All he needs to do now is like shoot 40% like once, and it's like, oh, it's over for everybody. But, you know, getting off the Nets, because it's kind of depressing, honestly, to like watch this every year. And so we don't immediately go into the Lakers, because that's another just like depressing ass story. I like that you brought up the Bucks, because I mean, this is a team that people, I feel like people just forget about them. Even though they've been successful, they've won a championship a couple seasons ago. They were, you know, a great organization, doing just playing well consistently for years, ever since Giannis really came aboard. They just like slip under the radar, because it's like, oh yeah, like the Bucks. Oh right, they're great. They're a really good team. And it all comes down to like Giannis Antetokounmpo is, as we mentioned, maybe the best player of our generation, the best player in the league right now, without a question in my mind. He is toying with people. He's toying with people. And I feel like one, he got even bigger this year. If you see him, like he's looking like he's got even more size to him somehow. But like in the same way, and I know it sounds like so crazy to say it, but in the same way, like feels like he's like leaned out a little bit. So he's like faster and more agile. And I'm like, what the fuck is this guy doing in the offseason? I've never seen anything like this. You know what I mean? It's really coming down to, I truly believe when it's all said and done, Giannis will go down as a top five player of all time.
I completely agree.
Clear in those headlights, because I mean his buildup was it took a few years, right? He was okay and then pretty good and then really good and then the best, and it just like keeps going there, and he keeps just like setting himself up further and further apart. And here's what is so great about this guy: he does it with his head down. He does it without causing problems. He causes it without being a head case or a dick and making people dislike him. There's nothing about Giannis Antetokounmpo that you can look at and be like, I don't like that about that guy. Except maybe they like, can't shoot threes. But like, besides that, everything else, you can't hate on him, right? Like Luka's a transcendent talent, but he's also a brat. You know what I mean? So it's like, you can dislike Luka. There's nothing about Giannis that causes that visceral reaction at all. You know what I mean?
No, not at all. And it's, you know, you talk about that drive that he looks like he has this year. Giannis looks angry and he's playing for something. And I think that's going to be him for his entire career, because, and that's the difference between him and a lot of the other stars in the league right now. And it's privilege. It really is privilege, because everyone knows the story of Giannis and where he came from and what that growth we've seen throughout his career. And you know what is not something that is easy to find in the NBA is a player that is constantly improving their craft. It's something that you don't see that sort of improvement on a year-to-year basis from a lot of the stars in the NBA. Like, as great as Luka Doncic is, I don't see him ascending to like anything greater. He's already almost at that peak that I think he might be at forever. And that's an unbelievable player that might be a top 20 all time. But he almost had that like sort of Ben Simmons bring up where he was the guy from the time he was little. Giannis was never that. Giannis was nothing. He was absolutely nothing. And even when he came into the NBA, he was nothing. And I think that that's something that he will never be satisfied with. I think until the end of his career, he is going to be pushing for more and more and being the greatest of all time. And that just brings a whole new level of like commitment to the Bucks organization is another part of that. We've seen a lot of players move on. I don't think he'll ever move on. I think he has that grace with the organization and wanting to be in one place and do something for one place, just like he did with Greece on the national team for so long. Like that's who he is. I just think that as far as the Bucks go, having him be the leading factor on that team is it just has got to change the way every single one of those players plays. I know that, like, you're talking about a group on that team with a lot of guys who have been other places before, and then when they came to Milwaukee, it was like a whole new level of committing as a group to win. Brooke Lopez, Drew Holiday, even Chris Middleton, he came along after the fact, but I mean, that's another point too. Middleton hasn't even taken the fucking court yet and they haven't lost a game. There's even guys like Wesley Matthews, fucking George Hill, man. Like, those guys are perfect examples of players that have been elsewhere and been nothing. They go to the Bucks and all of a sudden they're like, oh, Grayson Allen too. Like, another guy. Like,
Grayson Allen's doing great.
It just fits in. I think that's just who Giannis is. It's time that, like, everyone needs to recognize, like, the greatness that we're watching, because we gave LeBron, we gave Kobe, we gave Durant, that we gave them all their time to kind of do that. And it's fair to think of Giannis now in that class. He's not just like these other players that we're seeing in the league right now ascend to stardom. Like, he is actually all-time generational great. And I just, when I look at this Bucks team, I picked them to win the finals preseason, and, like, I just don't see any other way right now. I don't know how they aren't the best team in the NBA throughout this entire year. And they might have been that last year too. It was the Middleton injury really set them back. But, like, I'm not so sure that the Bucks without Middleton right now aren't the best team in the NBA. They were damn close to beating the Celtics last year without him. And it looks like this year, it's like you said, it's just another year of a better Giannis. And I don't know for how long I don't know how long it will be until we see a year where Giannis is worse than the year before, if ever. Like, until age catches up with him.
Because he plays a very physical brand, so eventually, and he has missed, you know, he's missed time in seasons past. But the thing for me, number one, Drew Holiday's playing the best basketball maybe of his career right now, early on, 9-game stretch. So again, just like going back to what I said in the beginning, like, take it with a grain of salt for now. Let's see if you can maintain it and stay healthy. But by the same token, it's like, if you are able to put up a 20-8 spot with a steal and a half, you know, for or even something close to that. I mean, what do you expect from Drew Holiday? Like, I expect maybe 16-8. You know, if he can do something like that, that's a very successful season. He's putting 4 more points up than that. You know, he's got his 3-point shooting. It's down percentage wise, but his volume is way up so far. He's shooting almost 7 a game, so he's getting more comfortable shooting threes. That was never his game early on. He never knew he would never shoot like that. You know, his field goal percentages are meh. You know, but he's also shooting 85% from the free throw line. So it's like he's doing a lot of things better than he was. And, like, let's not forget, he's only 32. It's fucking crazy to think about that. He's been in the league forever. You know, like 2008 when he started.
Was he a one and done when the Sixers drafted him? Yeah.
Yeah, he was 2009 draft class, I think, from UCLA. So, like, he was 19. He was young, you know, and, like, it took him a minute to get into the swing of things. He was the best player on a really bad Sixers team for a couple years, and you know, he's always just kind of established himself. He got, like, that one fluky All-Star way back when. I remember he was an 88 in 2K, and I was like, that seems a little high. But now, I mean, it's just it makes sense that he fits on this team. You know, and like, let's also not forget Brooke Lopez on this team. You know, Brooke Lopez, if we're looking at age, you know, 34, not the youngest. But at the same time, like, same thing. He's been in the league for so long that I think people forget that he used to be a 20-point-per-game guy in New Jersey before they moved to Brooklyn. Like, he was the guy. He was their main attraction. There wasn't really a lot going on there at that time, but, like, he was the main attraction. And so he's bringing that style of play back, except for the fact that, you know, we saw Brooke as the spot-up guy in their five-out scheme, like, corner spot-up guy. But, like, he's also, if you watch any of their games, like, he's factoring in a fair amount of inside game back into it. Because he's always had pretty good footwork, but it was always his mid-range and now 3-point shooting that really set him apart. So, like, Brooke right now is going, like, 2 for 6 from 3 a game. So, like, 36%, you know, okay, he's doing all right there, but he's also, you know, shooting 50% from the field. He's got his free throw percentages up. I mean, Shad talks about this when we're talking about Ja and talking about guys like Trey and a lot of different talents like this. Dwayne Wade, I think, was one of the best examples of this, is that concept of magnetism, right? You want to play with him because you enjoy them as a person and you enjoy them as a teammate. You're grateful they're on your team, right? I'm sure everybody on the Bucks is grateful that Giannis is on their team and not the other team, because that sucks to have to play against a guy like that who's able to do what he does to people. You know, I mean, he toys with humans, grown men, large men, and just like bullies them like children. Doesn't really look like he's capable of it from his size. Deceptively strong still, even though he looks bigger now than he did. So that team, and it goes back to, you know, the original point, like who actually has genuine staying power in the NBA? Who has the real staying power? Who can we look at from the standings in November 7th, 2022 for the 2022-23 season and tell ourselves with any kind of definitive notions or confidence, this team actually is going to be a threat all season? Should they stay healthy? I mean, the Bucks are the most obvious of the former. You know, at least in the Eastern Conference, I don't see anybody who is going to really be a legitimate threat, except for, you know, who we were talking about beforehand and probably in a couple other teams. I think the Celtics are probably still there with them, you know, but the question always comes down to, and this is the best thing about this season and the last couple seasons, is truly who is actually the favorites in this NBA right now? Like who is the definitive going to the finals for sure team? There is none. And that's something we hadn't had in the entire 2010s. We didn't have that. You know, 2020s, I think, are going to be a completely new decade when it comes to this. Third season in, we've already had three different finals matchups. You know, we've had three different finals matchups, and all of them have been exciting, and none of them have really been too ridiculous. And we even had a resurgence of the Warriors, you know? So, like, I don't know. I mean, what do you think about this Bucks team? Do you think it's like clear path? Let's say, again, way too early prediction kind of thing. Is this a clear path team, or do you think that there's like room for a bit of a dismantling here?
I mean, clear path, no. Not like we've seen in the past when LeBron was running through the East and the Warriors were out West. And I don't think that it's to that extent, but I think that might speak more to some of the other teams in the East as opposed to the Bucks, because the Bucks are there. Like they are, I think they're clearly the best team in the NBA. The Suns right there with them. And anybody who counted the Suns out preseason, I mean, they were your pick, and it's pathetic to count that team out. They're just, Chris Paul is going to fucking do its thing in the regular season as always. And D Books is on a fucking crash course. But to answer your question, no, I don't think it's clear. I think the you can't count out a team in the Celtics that was that young and made it all the way to the finals last year. They kind of all gained that experience. At the same time, though, I don't expect them to do it again. I think when we see a lot of times in sports in general, when you're that like young team that is a surprise finals championship appearance, it's tough to make it back immediately. I think they usually do get back, but like I think of the Bengals from last year. Like that team is not, I don't see them making the Super Bowl this year. It's hard to sort of catch that fire twice in the span of 2 years. So I think as far as the Celtics go, they're going to be there. They're going to be a tough out, but I don't really see them beating the Bucks, assuming health. In the West is where it gets interesting, because I do think like you have a lot of teams like the Suns and Memphis even, but you can make the same case for Memphis that you do with the Celtics, a young team that sort of made that run last year. But it just seems so wide open all across the board right now. There's so many really good teams that made these moves. Like, the fucking Cleveland Cavaliers and Atlanta Hawks. I think both of those teams are in a really exciting position where you talk about, we've talked about a lot of moves that have been made in the past couple of years that seem to be backfiring right now. That doesn't seem to be the case early on in Atlanta and Cleveland. Like, I would argue that the excitement that we're seeing with these cores is very different than the super team excitement that we were talking about with like the Nets. It feels so different. And I think that that's because they added to a foundation that was already in place and really fucking good. What the Hawks did this offseason is, and the past couple years too, is really special in my opinion, because this is a team that made it to the Eastern Conference Finals, carried by Trae Young, but also with great role players. And they haven't, despite a lot of trade talks for a while now, besides Cam Reddish and Gallinari, they really haven't lost much from that team. It's kind of remained the same core and then added an absolute star in DeJounte Murray. I think they've gone about it the right way. And that what I love about the NBA we're seeing right now is teams like that are starting to follow the trajectory of a Golden State or even you could argue Milwaukee, but it's the thing about Milwaukee is like the generational talent of Giannis you can't replicate. And you could say the same thing about Steph Curry, but you could say that the Hawks are trying to build similarly with Trae Young. I think with teams like this, you're seeing a path now where you don't necessarily have to, like, going out and trading for Anthony Davis and Kyrie. It's not always going to get the trick done. It's more about this young talent finding the pieces that can bring them all together and really, I think, allowing yourself time to grow. Even with the Celtics too, like, before going out, and I mean, the Celtics were brought up in many moves that, like, they tried a year with Kyrie that didn't work out. They've been brought up in the Durant sweepstakes and many other big name players that were on the market. And I think they're just kind of like reflecting, like, you know what, we might have what it takes here. It might be pieces like Malcolm Brogdon that are going to bring us to a championship level. And I think that's what's so exciting about the NBA right now is these sort of like middle to upper tier moves that are turning contenders into championship contenders more than ever. And I think that that is the direction we're headed for the next couple of years. We're like, it's not out of the question that next year we're talking about teams like the Hawks, teams like the Cavs, teams like, who's the other team? Boston, we already saw, but Toronto. These are the teams. Toronto's interesting, but I think they still got to go out and, like, next year they could get somebody of Murray's caliber to bring them over.
Yeah, they're throwing Pascal in some MVP talks. At least they were for the first few games of the season.
And they got injured, was like, right?
He was fifth on the ladder. I don't know how hurt he is, though. I'm not seeing too much, you know. But at the same time, it's just that's going to be a very interesting. Very interesting team in years to come, just because it's, you know, what Scotty brings to the table as well. It's just like, what do you really do?
They're fun. Fucking Van Vliet is a great player. He's a really, really good player. I believe in him strongly.
I mean, they have a really good core, you know, and he's been able to actually take a step back in scoring wise and like play more of a facilitator role, which is quite interesting for me. I also find it very funny in terms of scoring Scotty. Again, it's been fucking 9 games, but like exact same output as last year, except like more assists, shooting better from 3. So like, okay, you know, let's see what happens with that. But yeah, I mean, it's like we're seeing a bit of a changing of the guard, right? I mean, look at the Warriors struggling right now. I don't see that continuing. Steph Curry's playing MVP caliber basketball. He's actually playing the best I think I've seen him in a while. I mean, he is actually my league pass MVP right now. In month one, I think he's the league pass player of the month in November. So, or October so far. He dazzles. You know what I mean? It's like I want to watch all of his games because it's like it reminds me just of 2016. What is he going to do? He's always been like that. And it's a guy who can barely dunk. And it's like, that's the mentality that I go into watching a guy like that who can barely dunk playing this game with, you know? So the Warriors struggling, Lakers, and I think it's probably high time we start talking about this fucking train wreck. The Lakers are, in my opinion, the worst team in the league right now, because all the other teams here. Here's the thing. There's only one team in the league right now. I mean, you could throw the Warriors in this, but I just don't see this maintain their struggles maintaining. I think they're going to get it together. But when you're looking at a team like the Lakers right now, like, I don't see this getting better at all. Like, I actually think it might get worse. Because there's still guys playing well, and I don't anticipate that those guys are going to maintain their level of work. And it's just like, and it's so shitty to say it, but it's just like a matter of time until Street Clothes Davis comes out. It's just, he's not going to make it. You know what I mean? Like, I hate saying it, but it's like we say every year, if he stays healthy, and then he never stays fucking healthy, and then we're just like left, you know, twiddling our thumbs. I wonder what could have been with Anthony Davis. They are 2-7 right now. And if you look at the other teams in that range, minus the Warriors, Rockets, right? Kings, Thunder, Magic on the other side, Pistons, Hornets, very injured Hornets team. All of the Timberwolves, you know, they're eighth seed, tied for eighth at 5-5. Okay, so my point to this is all of these other teams are in rebuild mode. Every other one of those teams is rebuilding. They're all young. They have a young core of stars, like real star power, like SGA and, you know, a lot of those guys, Kevin Porter Jr., like all these different names. Pablo Banchero playing very good basketball. They have to learn how to win. Maybe they don't have the right coach. Maybe they need a new front office. Maybe they need a couple more pieces. Maybe they just need these guys to grow a little bit more. But, like, I don't anticipate any of those teams being at the basement in the next 5 years. The Lakers have absolutely nothing. They have officially aged LeBron James. Like, not officially because he's still LeBron. But it's like nobody in this sport can outpace time. Tom Brady can do it in football because he takes three steps back and then falls when someone comes after him. So let's not pretend that like he is this elite level athlete. Not really doing too much. He can do that at 46. That makes sense. LeBron James is 38 years old, right? 38 years old, 37, about to be 38 years old. And like it's going to come to pass that he's not going to keep making it through seasons. Right now, playing pretty well. You know, he's averaging 24 a game. He seven assists, 9 boards, about as good as you can really expect from him. 3-point shooting is down to 21%. Worst 3-point shooting of his career, even back when he sucked at shooting when he was young. You know what I mean? He has never shot this poorly. Again, 10 game window. But at the same time, like you said, Russell Westbrook somehow is like inefficiently playing the best on the team. Anthony Davis is doing what he does. They just don't mesh. Nobody on this team meshes. There's no pieces on this team. You know, there's no leadership on this team. It just seems like there's a bunch of guys who are in LA and having a blast and like don't really care about what happens to their legacy.
Even the way they're like fucking celebrating the first win of the season, like they just clinched a playoff berth. I mean, really? Really? I get it. It's the first win of the coach's career, but it's terrible what's going on there. And what I can't understand is at least I can fathom how like the Nets would go into a season with like, all right, maybe Ben Simmons could do this and Kyrie can stay on the floor and not be a psychopath. And we have a path to being a legit contender. Like the Lakers, nobody in their right mind thought going into the season, this team had any shot of surprising anyone. And they just decided to go into the year. Like, I don't get what all this, I sit here and watch Stephen A every morning, like apologize for, Rob Pelinka. And how is that guy not fired? He is horrible. he's just made horrible decision after horrible decision. And the worst part is, like, you talk about LeBron shooting the worst percentage of his career, which he's never been a good shooter. He doesn't look good this year. The number will improve, but it's not going to improve that much. But he's in a position where a lot of guys his age are able to be on a team where they can kind of sit back and not shoot the three or shoot as often as he has to. He might still be the best three-point shooter, not named Reeves, on the team.
Matt Ryan.
It's Matt Ryan. Yeah, Matt Ryan, who said when he hit that shot that he was ready for that moment. Like,
he's the best athlete named Matt Ryan.
he's the only starter. Actually, no, he's not even a starter. He's the only one getting playing time.
That's fucked up, bro.
I don't know where they go from here. I don't even know if, like, the pieces they have are tradable. They've tried with Russ. I mean, is Anthony Davis, with his baggage and the contract, is he somebody that teams are going to be after? And at what point?
100%. They'll want him.
You would think. I mean, at what point can LeBron legitimately move is the question. Because you just read off his stats. I mean, he's got plenty to give. And I think he'd be even better
got a foot injury. So it's like, here we kind of go again, right? Like, he has been plagued by the injury bug for the last couple of seasons. Like, I don't know if anybody can really deny anymore that, like, he is getting older. That was not something we could say about LeBron 5 years ago. LeBron did not get hurt before. Mm-hmm. I mean, he played every game that he wanted to, basically. 77 to 78 to 80 games a season. And now every year, like, we're getting like 50, 60 games out of him. You know what I mean? Like, he gets some injury in the middle of the season. It's always lower extremities. And that's the worst place for it to be at, you know? So, listen, they don't have a lot of pieces that are going to continue they have to, like, their restart, their rebuild, there's no one to start with. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's nobody to start a rebuild with, and it's
nothing.
It's dangerously close to being needed ASAP. I think the buses, Genie has this idea that the Lakers have to always be competitive. Right, like, the Lakers always have to compete and be good, and there's no room for a rebuild on the Lakers franchise. But we're seeing it firsthand right now. The Lakers are a bad team, and it's quite clear, just like we saw eventually in Utah, just like we saw in a lot of different cities, a lot of different teams. Eventually, you have to admit that your core doesn't work, and you have to try to fix it. Right? I mean, that's what we're dangerously close to having to, like, see it dismantle and fall apart in order for it actually to go somewhere. You know, I mean, look at the other team in the city, right? The Clippers are, I don't know. It's really hard to, I don't get them.
They're weird.
Team ever. It's very frustrating that, like,
at least you have something to blame it on with them. Like for it, they're gonna make the playoffs, and I think, like, we can make excuses for them all year long because they gotta get gel back together. Kawhi's only gonna play fucking 40 games. Like, you can make excuses for that, but it's just, I mean, even they are a bizarre team. It's crazy to think they were the favorites to finish with the best record in the NBA this year.
Could you imagine? I mean, so they are a strange team because this management is still going on, this load management shit for Kawhi. I mean, if I was Kawhi Leonard, I would be embarrassed. Like, I'd be embarrassed that every time I'm listed on an injury report, it's like knee management.
Literally, they made a new ruling that you can a player can be ruled out for Kawhi Leonard, literally.
You know what I mean? Like, he made that happen, and it's embarrassing. And I think the news story was that he was frustrated with this, that it keeps happening to him. It's like, bro, you did this because you didn't want to play in San Antonio anymore. You didn't know how to tell him, so you sat out for a season when you weren't actually hurt, and now every other team, their doctors are under the impression that you have this issue that needs to be managed. Right. So now they're stuck with the core that they have, which is a good core. I mean, Paul George, he's on my fantasy team. He's actually playing quite well. You know, he has his bad games. He has his Paul George-esque games. But for the most part, I mean, 25 a game is nothing to scoff at. He's also getting about 5 assists and 6 boards. So, you know, playing well on defense, shooting well from the field. He got me a 95-point night one night last week. 95 points. I think that might be the highest of the season for anybody. I don't think anybody's come that close to 100. That's wild. You know what I mean? Like 37 points. He had like 5-6 steals. He had like, you know what I mean? Like 2 blocks, went 12 for 15 from the field, 4 threes, like some crazy fucking numbers. And it's like he has the capability of doing that. Now, John Wall's played in every single one of the team's games except for one. He's averaging 13 points a game and 5 assists, which is low for him. But at the same time, we haven't seen John Wall play in like how long, right? I mean, didn't play last year. He basically sat out, they said. The year before in Houston, you know, no one talks about it, but he averaged 20 points and 7 assists very quietly. You know what I mean? It's still John Wall's John Wall, bro. Like I'll never say that guy's not fucking gangster. I mean, okay, bad choice word because he's actually a gangster, but he's a very good basketball player too, right?
Really good player for sure.
I mean, so I think that's a piece that you had mentioned before the season. And I agree with you. I think it's going to be quite interesting to see just how effective and efficient he is. Now, he's scoring the worst of his career, but he also didn't play last year. So I think that has something to do with it too. So, you know, I mean, it's a huge career that he's had. And I think it's going to get a resurgence. Now, the other team, and this goes back, I think, to the initial point, do they have staying power? Portland Trailblazers. Do they have staying power in the West? Because they are right now, I think, 7-6, 7-3. Dame just came back today. They are winning games without him, and he is absolutely just lighting everybody up right now.
I think they'll be a playoff team, maybe play in. I think they're honestly right there with the Jazz, really. And I don't think that's a compliment to the Jazz. It's not an insult to the Blazers, because I think the Jazz are, surprisingly, they have a lot of NBA talent, like a lot. And I think, like, I almost look at the Blazers have Dame, which is the difference. I mean, he's still Dame, and for whatever the reason is, we have joked about it for years now, but he refuses to leave Portland, although all signs point towards that being the move. But I think now he kind of wants to help. I mean, I couldn't believe when they said in the beginning of the season that this was the first time him and Anthony Simons had ever played in a backcourt together, a starting backcourt. Because you forget he was out all of last year, basically. Yeah. I think he's looking at this damn, I can kind of grow with a new group of ascending Trailblazers talent. And I think they could definitely be a bottom tier playoff team in the West. But then I look at Utah and I'm like, this is a core of players that might be even deeper than Portland. They just are lacking a star, but there's no reason why that can't be a team that is – they're far better than the Lakers. And, that's not even like going into the season, no one would have said that. But I think right now that's, clear that that's the case and going to be the case, this entire season. They have legitimate players on their team. I don't mean to, stray the conversation from Portland to Utah, but I think this all does go back to the Lakers being that dreadful. You are talking about – two teams that go into the season you would have never thought are going to finish with a better record than the Lakers. And I think at this point it's a matter of fact. And we're 9 games into the season. It really is crazy. I think about
Utah reminds me of. They remind me of the 2011 Nuggets team when the Knicks traded for Carmelo. And the Knicks
did that team.
They were good. Yeah, they went to the playoffs. They were a 5 seed.
Really?
They did pretty well because they didn't have a star. They had Wilson Chandler and Gallo and Kenneth Faried when he started to come up, and Raven Felton and all those guys, you know, who came from New York in that trade for Carmelo. And they did better than us for like two straight years with all the guys that we gutted for it. But I mean, the Jazz are the Cavs right now. Like Markkanen, Colin Sexton, like all these guys just came from Seti Osman, you know, like, I don't know, Shetty's still in Cleveland, isn't he?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I would, so here's what I want to ask is like just roster construction wise and what I'm looking at with this Jazz team, which is they're playing with energy. They have an unbelievable amount of legitimate NBA talent that has like really been all over the place. All these guys have seen so much in their career. Like they're not all young, but they do have some young players too. Sexton's young. Markkanen's not that old. I look at that roster and
five.
What I'm thinking is like, imagine LeBron James. Don't go with the direction that he would get traded to the Jazz, because that's not what I'm saying. But imagine LeBron James surrounded by a team like,
yeah,
built like this.
No, I know. I just, when you right? said that initially, I
you're like LeBron going to Utah.
Imagine him in Salt Lake.
Oh my God.
I watch a game, if I turned it on, I'll like turn to my girlfriend and be like, we're gonna play a game. The game's called Spot a Black Person in the Stands.
In Utah.
I'll give you $50 if you can spot a black person in the stands.
That isn't on the court, a member of media, or a ref.
Exactly, or a coach. I can't imagine anybody going there in free agency.
No, that's the thing about the Jazz.
They have to trade for people, and they have to draft them. Mm-hmm. They don't. They have the worst city to pull a free agent. They have no. There's no chance. They've never done it. If you think about the entire history of the Utah Jazz, and this is why it's such a commendable franchise, because they've always been competitive. I don't remember a Jazz team that was bad, honestly, because it went from Malone Stockton almost immediately into Darren Williams. And Boozer, and then immediately from there, now we're going into, I mean, you get Mitchell eventually, but like after that, you know, you still had teams that were performing well. Hayward was after that, you know, you see those guys playing well.
Yeah,
Derek Favors, like, they always have been pretty good, and it was either, you know, Sloan or Quinn Snyder. I mean, there was always a coach that was running the shop that was always doing well. They were, you know, for a while they were like a 7-8 seed, but like they were always like in the playoffs. And it's like they have done that without ever once attracting a free agent to sign with them in free agency. And it's almost like they know that. Like they're like, we're not gonna be the place where Kevin Durant's gonna want to go. There's not a single player on the planet that is gonna want to come here to play basketball. It's like the Kings, you know what I mean? The Kings and the Jazz, they're two teams that like one of them's done it right. One of them's done it about as badly as possible.
Terribly wrong.
You know what I mean? Like one of them should probably move to Vegas now sooner rather than later. And so, I mean, seeing them playing well, it's not even a surprise. They have a roster that is serviceable. And when you look at it from a core standpoint, like pretty good. Right, they play off of each other well. Their guys, a lot of them know each other. They've played with each other. I mean, Colin Sexton was the guy in Cleveland for a while, and Lauri Markkanen was the guy in Chicago before he got traded. You know, when he got traded, it was kind of a big deal. It was like, holy shit, this guy just averaged like 19 points a game for you guys. Like, why are you getting rid of him? He's a true 7-footer who can dribble and shoot. I mean, like, it goes really under the radar what he's capable of doing. So, you know, the team is – I think it's a viable candidate for like a middle of the pack playoff team. I think they're a viable candidate for being a disruptor in the playoffs. You know, there's like a 6 seed taking out like a Grizzlies team, like viable to do something like that. At the end of the day, I think that they're going to probably come back to the mean. They're going to revert to the mean eventually. This is a very hot start, but I think that eventually people are going to figure out what to do with them. And, you know, we'll see them kind of middle it out. But, you know, that's why when I saw the Blazers playing the way they were, it's like they have the piece that everyone needs, and that's the star, right? You need to have a heliocentric structure if you want to be genuinely great. Now, you can't be so heliocentric that you turn into the Mavericks, But at the same time, you have to have a guy who can at any given time just say, you know what, fuck it, I'm going off for 40. You know, and that's Dame. Like, he's able to do that. So that's why, and Chauncey Billups has them playing the best defense I've ever seen them play. I saw Dame lock down somebody a couple weeks ago. Have you ever seen that?
Like, no, that's a new development.
He was like silver level badge clamps. I was blown away because he gave a shit, you know, and that's like Chauncey Billups. That's who he is. Chauncey Billups gets teams to give a fuck because that's how he plays. He has that thing that Nash needed. He's got that it factor. He's got that chip on his shoulder, that anger, that like gangster, you know, mindset, that like raw energy that you need as a point guard coach. So that's what we ran into in Portland. So like, you know, when we're getting into the season like this, this is why it's so fucking hard to read these teams, because you never know who's going to be able to make it, who's going to last. Because there are a lot of teams that are going to do like pretty well for a bit, and then like they get one injury and it all falls apart. And I think that you're going to run into that with a lot of these guys. I think, you know, if we run into more injuries with the Nuggets, that 6-3 record looks really good on paper right now. But I mean, like, how contingent is that on like Jokic being healthy all season, Murray being healthy? You know what I mean? Like, Gordon's playing well, Bones Highland's playing well, but I don't know. That's an interesting team. That's an interesting construct.
That's my finals pick, and I'm sticking with it because I think they have so much room still to grow. That's really what I'm looking at right now, is like, I think there's two directions teams can go. I mean, we're 9 games into the season. You're either going to – I don't really think there's going to be a lot of, like, staying where they are, like, from any of these teams. I think either you're ascending or – I mean, it's really – the reality is that's life. Like, you are either ascending or you're descending. And I think that what I'm looking for and teams to watch out for are teams where I can see a path towards ascending. I think you can make those cases for a Portland. I think Utah is probably going to descend, but not out of the playoff picture. As far as Denver goes, they might be the most ascending team in that Western Conference because they have a path. I'm not saying they're 100% going to. I mean, them as my finals pick is a long stretch. I get that. But they have the path when you consider that their second and third best player are both returning from massive injuries in a year without playing. And they're just kind of figuring things out now, as opposed to some of these other teams that I don't really think have that path towards ascending. I mean, you got to have – there's not a lot of moves that get made in the NBA that are massive during the season. The trade deadline tends to be more of a role player type thing, as opposed to other sports where you can more go after like a star. I don't know if that's gonna happen this season. You kind of have to have it within, and that's why, like, you got to look for these teams like I keep bringing up Atlanta and Cleveland in the East, and then in the West, I think we haven't even talked about the Pelicans, but they're another team.
Just about to bring them up. That's the last team I want to talk about, because I mean, okay, I don't like talking about teams with such a huge contingency factor, but then when I look at the Pelicans, the immediate thought is they fall apart if Zion goes down. But then the reminder is, no, they don't, because he was down last year and they made the playoffs, and they put a show on in the playoffs. This is a very interesting team, because I mean, Zion, you know, he missed a couple games already, whatever, like, that's to be expected. But on top of him, we also have, you know, we also have CJ, who's still CJ, and we have a Brandon Ingram who is, I think a lot of people forget, fucking 25 years old. You know, he's only 25. It's so fucking weird. Feels like he's been in the league for like 19 years. So, I mean, that's an interesting concept. That's going to be a team that's going to cause some problems in the Western Conference. Like, that is a mesh. Those guys, especially with a leader like CJ, you know, I mean, that's really going to be an interesting team. Willie Green kind of bringing it all home. So, Yeah, I mean, that's, I think we should probably go into them a bit more next week. Mm-hmm. Because I wanted just to wrap up giving an, you know, talking about that sweepstakes we were trying to do for a few weeks here. To be honest, guys, I fucking forgot about, sorry. But like, so Shad's book's coming out this month, it sounds like. This month, next month, whenever. I mean, it's coming out soon. So I was going to say, I was trying to think of like somebody coming up with the closest for a trivia number, closest, you know, whatever. I think the best way to do this is if you subscribe to the YouTube, you get a drawing. If you do that plus you review, you get three. Right?
Absolutely.
You know, so the different levels of engagement is going to cause you to get in a drawing. We're going to monitor this for the next month. So anybody who likes Rashad Phillips, and I'll tell him that this is what it is. Anybody who likes Rashad Phillips and wants to read his book, you have a chance to not only get a free one, but get it signed by him. And I'll send it to you directly. I got a couple of them. He said he's going to sign it before it gets to me. So if you want one, then simply subscribe to our YouTube. I think we're relatively entertaining. I don't think we're very drove and boring. I see these podcasts out there and I think, wow, this man has the personality of a wet piece of fucking parchment paper. So that's why does he, you know, it's funny too. And I was actually thinking about this today. Like one of these guys I know, like started one of those like self-help podcasts. And like, here's me on a podcast talking about like how podcasters annoy me. Because I'm like, do you really take yourself so seriously that you're going to start a podcast about how you develop yourself? Like, do you really think so highly of yourself that you're going to go on a fucking record and say, this is how I make sure that I can keep my routine going this way? This is how I keep all the toxins out of my system. Like, fuck you, dude. I don't know. Like, that just bugged the shit out of me because it, like, makes every podcast seem, like, so fucking corny because of that. But anyway, so just to get out of my soapbox for a second, subscribe to it. Like it. Subscribe to the YouTube. Like the video. And then DM us on Instagram or Twitter to tell us you did it. Okay. And then obviously like we'll check whatever the case is. You're not just fucking saying you're doing that. And then if you want three drawings on top of the ones, so that's four total. You get three total, three for just reviewing. And then you get an extra one for subscribing. So four total. If you do both, let's say you get five.
Perfect. What do you say? I think that's seems like a perfect plan.
Person. There's a lot of ways that you can get your name in this. So we can pull it out there. We're going to draw two. I got two coming. I got, you know, two coming for drawings. I got one for Mark and one for me. So it's a good book. It's coming out soon. And, you know, I think.
And even, even if you don't necessarily know Rashad, you haven't really looked at it. Even if you don't know us, to be honest, you haven't listened. Maybe this is your first time listening. You heard about the giveaway and now you're taking a listen. Obviously, go follow Rashad Phillips. He's unbelievable. Just some of the best basketball content that you can really find out there in the Twitter sphere. Really, I think he has an Instagram too. Just absolutely show some love. And I think this book is gonna be really great to help educate all kinds of NBA fans out there that you might think you know all you can possibly know about the NBA. This will teach you something. Absolutely.
You guys dedicated his life to guys who have gone under the radar like he did. Right.
Absolutely.
So he spent the rest of his career so far building a name for himself, finding talent as diamonds in the rough. You know, he was talking like I mentioned this every time. I was talking about John Morant when he was 19, 18 years old as a sophomore freshman at Murray State. No one knew who he was. He was a one-star recruit coming out of high school. You know, now he's John Morant. So like that's what we're talking about. He's done that more than once. So that's going to be a huge book. I think it's going to really change the landscape and the way that we view the positional system in the NBA. And I think it's high time that it's happened. So, you know, get on that bandwagon just like we did. I think we were early to the to the train. So that's always nice. But we'll get everything squared up here. Also, SGA's got 71 points on you right now. I'm just saying.
Oof. Are we playing each other this week?
Yeah.
Oh, why do you think I called you? You did tell me that. I forgot about that.
I said you. I literally called you the ops when I came in here. Like, what the
fuck? Now I remember. Now.
Yeah, man.
Also, real quick, before we sign out, let me pull this thing down. Real quick shout out to my boy. You guys hear me talk about him a lot. Member of Nick and mine fantasy basketball team for a short period of time.
A very short period of time, yeah.
Cam Johnson, get better soon. Torn meniscus. Should be back this season. Honestly, I might need to do some touch-ups on my NBA injury knowledge because torn meniscus, I was like, he's out for the year. Apparently, there's a good chance he'll be able to play the last, like, 2 months of the season.
But I mean, it's also like it's the beginning of the season.
Fair enough, true.
So, and also, I mean, technology, future, you know, I don't know. Who knows? I don't know anything about medicine, so we'll see. I think this is going to be a very interesting week. I think we should come back and talk more about these Pelicans and see kind of what we can see what developments we see come from either Zion playing more or not.
So. It'll be the theme of the year as far as the Pelicans go.
All right. So subscribe, guys. Just do that. Fuck. It's so fucking easy. Just do it. So, like, you know, I don't know. I'm out of stuff to say. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm very close to rambling. So I'm just going to say subscribe, review this shit, and don't do a bad one because you know it's not fucking bad. You know it's not bad. So say good things about us. Be nice. Make a funny joke or something. If I laugh, I'm going to give you an extra truck and drive. Okay, that's it.